I might die. So I thought to myself,
Right.
I gotta figure out how do I navigate this world of I might die and I still want my wife to be able to eat. And the only thing I knew that worked for sure was real estate. The real estate was much more predictable, so I just kept doing that and leaned into it.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. I'm excited for today's show. I got Jeff Holst here. Let me tell you a little about Jeff. He's gone from rags to riches and back. He currently owns 300 plus residential units and multiple commercial properties. In February of 2020, Jeff climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and he stood at the highest point in all of Africa. He's co-host and founder of Last Life Ever podcast. He's passionate about helping people live the best possible version of their lives. He also co-hosts, this is a fun one, he also co-hosts the old-fashioned real estate show where he drinks none other than bourbon old fashions, talks about real estate investing. So I'm excited to have him here. Jeff, how you doing?
I am doing quite well. Thanks for having me.
Good. I'm excited for you here. Thanks for taking the time. Tell me, you know, we all have different entry points into this business. What was yours? How did you first get into real estate?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could start really far back. My parents are real estate people. My dad's always ran a lot of small businesses and he had a few rentals. So when I was 13, 14, I got, you know, prescribed to do like cleanouts and stuff like that. So I had a little early exposure to real estate, but I really didn't start investing until, you know, I was around 30 or so, a little bit after that, 31, 32 years old.
Sure.
So just really about 10 or 12 years ago, I started investing. And that happened after I, you know, you alluded to my, in my bio there, riches to rags and back, really. Yeah. What happened was I was a bankruptcy attorney and I was, this is 2008, 2009, and we were filing a ton of bankruptcies and we were making a lot of money. Sure. And then I got diagnosed with leukemia. And I ended up, you know, I was only a few years out of law school. I mean, I was doing well, but I was working for myself. So small firm, and I had no other attorneys working for me. So we went from making good money to losing a bunch of money every single week. And I ended up personally bankrupt about a year and a half later. So from that, I went, I might die. So I thought to myself, I got to figure out, you know, how do I navigate this world of I might die and I still want my wife to be able to eat. And the only thing I knew that worked for sure was real estate. So I wanted residual income. I tried a lot of other stuff, you know, wrote a book, didn't sell, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And, you know, we tried starting a couple of businesses and some of them made some money. I mean, they all made a little money, but the real estate was much more predictable. So I just kept doing that and leaned into it.
It's a lot steadier when you can put an asset in place and properly manage it either yourself or externally, right?
Versus- oh, yeah, for sure.
That's a lot easier to manage than how do you manage a business?
And, yeah, I mean,
how do you manage a law practice? Right.
Yeah, and the thing for me was like, I mean, I could run a business. I mean, I'm good at it. I've done it for other people. I've done it for myself. The problem is, I didn't know that I was going to be around to keep doing that.
Right.
And I needed something that was going to provide predictable, stable income. And it's possible to systematize businesses to the point where you don't need to be involved, but it takes a lot of effort. Sure. And with real estate, that infrastructure is already there. You find a good property manager. And you don't have to manage it day to day.
Yeah. What was going on in, you know, what was your mindset when you got diagnosed? Where was your head?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I mean, the thing is, like, I didn't expect it, right? Who does at 30?
Right.
You don't go, okay, I'm going to die at 30 or whatever.
Right.
And I had just gone back from Peru. I had spent about 3 weeks just kind of touring around Peru. And I had a little bit of a cough and I just couldn't get better. So I went to the doctor and they thought maybe I picked up a parasite or something. So it kind of came completely out of the blue, right? Yeah. They did blood work, gave me some antibiotics. And I got a call at like 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday that was like, hey, you have leukemia. You got to go to the hospital right now. And I mean, when you hear that, it's like, it's life-changing for sure. And not in the good life-changing, like I just won the lottery kind of way.
Yeah,
it's sort of the reverse of that. But I've had this philosophy since I was 17 years old. I call it the no bad day philosophy. I just believe, you know, if there's good and bad stuff that happens to everyone every day.
Yep.
And I just try to look at the positive stuff. And I've been doing that for 13 or 14 years at that point. It was so apparent to me that, you know, was such a part of who I was by that point that people were coming into the hospital saying, oh, I bet today's a bad day. Almost like they were rooting against me. You know, yeah, like right. They were like, yeah, I bet now, you know, you're going to have a bad day for sure. And I was just like, not really. Like, I didn't find out till 10 o'clock at night. Most of the day was pretty good. But then the next day it was like, I was sitting in the hospital, and this was a bit more challenging because, you know, the whole day I'm thinking about this, and my white blood cell count was stupid high. And, you know, I had a cousin who had died of leukemia a few years before that, and my blood counts were way worse than hers. And I was just like, I'm definitely not going to make it. And my dad was saying like, oh, this is in September. He said, if you live till February, we can go to Australia. And I'm just like, man, I just hope I make Christmas. You know, that's where my head was. Right. Wow. But at the same time, I still was like, okay, what positive is coming from this? And I was like, man, all these people are coming to see me and they love me. And then I sent my wife home finally after about 36 hours. I'm like, you got to get some sleep. And so she went home and there was a shift change. It's probably 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Right. And this nurse comes in and she looks at me and she goes, oh my God, Jeff, I'm like, so sorry to see you here. And I'm just like, oh my God, Shelly, I'm so happy to be here, because it was like a childhood babysitter of mine. Wow. And like seeing her made the whole day good.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So when that happened, you know, people probably thought I was deranged, but the thing is, however you perceive the stuff going on around you is really how you're going to receive it. And, you know, at that moment, that day felt pretty good to me in spite of all the garbage that was going on. And we all are going to have that garbage in our life. And so it felt good to me at the time, and that matters. And then in retrospect, honestly, I always wanted to invest in real estate and I was never motivated to do it. If I hadn't gotten sick, I might still be a happy, but, you know, not completely satisfied bankruptcy attorney, and probably not making very much money because, you know, the economy hasn't created a lot of bankruptcies in the intervening decade or so.
Correct.
Although that may change here in the future. We can talk about that if you want. But, I mean, honestly, like, that was probably the best day of my life in a lot of ways, because it set me on a trajectory to get me to here now. So while people thought I was weird at the time, I stand by that. You know, you choose your day. Right now, someone's having the worst day of their life and someone else is having the best day. So the day is not good or bad. It's just how you perceive it.
You made the decision when you were 17. What was the genesis of that decision?
You know what? No one has ever asked me that before. So thank you for asking. Yeah. I wrote about this in a book that I have coming out in the fall. But I don't know the exact reason that I was in this state, because it's so foreign to me now. And I want to be clear, because I don't want to claim that this is like a magic trick or something, but I walked into a bathroom when I was 17 with a knife intending to kill myself. And that's weird. I never said that out loud to people on a podcast before. So, but anyway, so I walked into this bathroom and I put this knife on my wrist. It was like a Miracle Blade 2000. We know these knives, they have like a Ginzu knife, like cut through anything and stay sharp. And it has a serrated blade. I actually think the serrated blade is what made the decision. I put this thing on my wrist and it hurt. And I was like, this is dumb. I don't like pain. Like, I'm trying to avoid pain. I don't know. Right. So like something clicked in my head and I just went, I'm 17 and like, I'm in a middle-class family in America. Like, how bad can my life be? Like, maybe I ought to see if I can't figure out how to make today a good day. And so I said, I'm just going to decide today's a good day. And so I went out and I threw the knife away and I, you know, I said, today's a good day. And I woke up in the morning the next day and said, today's a good day. And you know what? It really wasn't. It wasn't like magic. Like, I didn't fix everything that was going on. And the stuff that I was worried about in retrospect is so ridiculous, right? Like, my girlfriend and, like, you know, people I don't even know anymore were mean to me, you know, stupid teenage stuff.
But at the time it felt like the world. It was the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. And, you know, and I'm not, listen, I want to be super clear about this, because suicide's not something, I mean, it's a bad deal. And there's a lot of people that make some bad decisions, and if people are feeling that way, they need to get some help, right? Absolutely. They call the people that can help them, talk to people. But for me, you know, from that low point, what I learned is I didn't really want to die. I just wanted to be happy. And so I just set about trying to do that. And I created this mantra, today's a good day. And I just said it over and over and over again. And it took a few months, but one day after about 2 or 3 months, I walked into a 7-Eleven. The guy behind the counter, he says to me, how are you doing today? And I go, I never have bad days. And then I went, holy crap, I never have bad days. You know, like I just, like it just hit me. And then I went, when was the last bad day I had? And I start thinking back and I'm like, I haven't had one in a while and I haven't had one since. So, you know, no bad days philosophy in the nutshell. I mean, there's some real science behind this. Like, I didn't understand it at the time. I mean, this is the early 90s. Yeah. And, you know, we didn't have YouTube and stuff because Google hadn't been invented yet. So right. I didn't know who Tony Robbins was or mantras or mm-hmm. positive affirmations. Right. But that's really what I was doing, right? I
mean, exactly right.
I was leaning into a mantra that worked for me. And I'm a big believer in them to this day because of that.
Yeah. Well, you set an expectation for yourself when you get up, and then, you know, life runs through the filter in which you've created, and you're pulling off positive pieces through the day.
Yeah. And the thing is, like Tony Robbins calls it the reticular activating system, but yep. you know, it's like the ability that your subconscious mind defaults to what's familiar. So the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And the thing is, it's like stuff actually works. There's actually so much science behind correct. It. I've done tons of research since it's actually called the Bader-Meinhof effect, but it really is. It's like, just like when you get a new car and all of a sudden everyone's got the same car. It's not like they weren't there before, you know, that good stuff was happening to you anyway. You just weren't looking for it. That's so if you just sort of lean into the good stuff and try to not spend a lot of time worried about the bad, after a while, those neural pathways just rewire themselves to be positive.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so great. If that's the only thing anyone gets from the show, I would say like they could stop listening right now. Although they should listen to the rest because we got more good stuff to come. But exactly. like if you can get that, like just, you know, keep re-listening to it till you do.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree with you more. Once you get so much of life and certainly business success is mindset related. Get the mind right and all these other things that you can learn and do, you know, press A to get B to get C. Things just line up.
Yeah, no, and it expands way beyond just this, like, you know, choosing correct. To be happy that's kind right. of thing. It's about recognizing that you have to be responsible for everything that's going on in your life. It doesn't make it your fault. It wasn't my fault. I got leukemia, but I still had to take responsibility mm-hmm. for it and say, okay, what do I do next?
Right.
And that's when I decided to get into real estate. And, you know, I mean, over a course of 6 years, I went from, you know, 100,000 in negative net worth because my student loans didn't mm-hmm. go away in bankruptcy, yep.
right.
you know, no credit, no money. And, you know, and 7 years later, I was able to quit my job because I took a corporate job. I was able to quit it and I've never had to go back to work since.
So I've continued
to grow well yeah. since then.
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place, batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batchleads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT. For 50% off your first month. Let's start there. Talk to me about how in the world did you get a property financed? What did you do? So maybe 100 grand yeah. in the debt. They've gone through bankruptcy. So for anybody out there who's like, how'd you get out of it?
Yeah. So in fairness, it was 2011 when this was going on. So the market was completely different than it is now.
Correct.
You know? Yep. So we're, 11 years later, the market's been up almost every minute of every day since then.
Right.
So stuff was really cheap. So that helped. Yeah. So the first deal we did, we actually paid cash for. So I took a job. Cool. I worked for a year, saved up my bonuses, didn't spend a lot of money. I mean, I didn't have any other debt, right? I had my student loan payment, but a few hundred dollars a month, $500-$600 a month. I mean, it wasn't nothing, but I had an MBA and a law degree. So I got a pretty good salaried job. Mm-hmm. And I just worked really hard to save money. And we saved up like $20,000. And I had a friend who had some money. And I said to him, listen, he was doing flipping houses and stuff. I said, if you see something that you're flipping that you really like, let's just buy it and keep it. You know, we'll fix it up and keep it. And so that's what we did. We bought a condo in a nice area. It was a bank-owned foreclosure for $30,000, and we paid cash $15,000 each. Yep. So that's how we did the first deal. Of course, then I was out of money and still had no credit, right? No ability to finance.
Correct.
And I got a little lucky on the second deal. We actually named our first, we started in, we're both attorneys. So, you know, we started LLCs and stuff before we had businesses, you know, like, sure. You know, that's what you do.
Right.
And so we named our first LLC after the address of the property we were buying.
Yep.
And it was it was a condo. So like there was like, you know, 123 Main Street, number one or whatever. Right. Yep. And so a little while later, number seven or something in the bill, I think it was number 10 actually, that came available next. Same kind of situation, bank owned foreclosure. And my partner says, hey, we should buy this one. And I'm like, I don't have any money left. Yeah. And he was like, well, we already have this LLC, so I'll just loan you your half. And so I actually borrowed it from him and then paid it back out of the next, out of my next set of bonuses and salary. Yeah. And so that's kind of how I got into the second deal. And then again, same problem. For the third deal,
right?
No money, no credit,
right.
And so I found a family member who had a little bit of money, and I said, "Hey, you know, I've got these two paid off condos. Why don't you take a mortgage on each one, and then put in an equal amount?" So we got a $25,000 mortgage on each condo, and then he put in $25,000 additional. So he put up $75,000. $50,000 collateralized, and we started a new company, and we ended up buying a duplex for cash with $75,000. And then we just kept repeating that model. Actually, we just kept like borrowing money from him and buying stuff, and he was keeping a third of it. And that worked out really well for a while. Yeah. In fact, he loaned us $700,000 or $800,000 over the next 4 years.
Yeah.
And then once you have a little bit of momentum,
right,
then it becomes a lot easier. Then we were starting to be able to get bank loans. And of course, sometimes we would sell some stuff and we'd pile up a little cash. And meanwhile, for 7 years, though, we never took a dollar out of our real estate. Like most people took cash flow right away.
Yep.
Our philosophy was every dollar of cash flow stayed in the business because none of us needed it. You know, we all had jobs and other income, and we figured, why not just let it build up?
Was there a common goal in place from, let's call it a partnership, for the three of you about here's where, you know, here's where we are, but here's where we want to be?
No, you know what it really was is that our third partner, he was making a reasonably large amount of money that he wanted to deploy, and he just didn't want it sitting around.
Right.
He was afraid inflation would come someday. He was a little early on that, but it has come. So he was right.
Yes.
And so he didn't want to sit on a pile of cash. And so, but he also was extremely busy and didn't have time to spend as much time in the business as us. And so we just set about, you know, trying to find the best deals we could, and figured if we got a piece of a deal, it was better than none of the deal.
Right.
And so we did that kind of work and just kept redeploying that capital. And, you know, so it was a growth idea. You know, none of us were really looking at it as a retirement plan. But, you know, flash forward 6 years, the company I was working for was getting sold to a big publicly traded company, and I was offered a job in their legal department. I already didn't like working for somebody. I really wasn't going to like working for a publicly traded company. Right. And so I instead took 6 months severance and figured, well, I'll figure it out. Now at that point, I'd still taken $0 from real estate. Yeah. You know, we just kept reinvesting it, but I knew there was value. Yeah. We had about 50 properties, you know, 55 or six units, mostly single families and a few duplexes. And most of it was free and clear, except for whatever we owed our one investor.
The partner. Yep.
Yeah, the one partner slash investor, who we really was. I mean, we started an LLC, and it was the three of us together, and he would just loan money to the LLC, and then we'd go buy something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was this full partnership. And we had done a little bit of other real estate. So my first partner and I had bought a couple of things separate from our third partner. And then, I ended up doing one deal with another friend of mine and stuff. So a few things, but I mean, we'd never taken money out of any of this. And so I was like, okay, well, I got to figure out how to make my 6 month severance last as long as possible.
Right.
So I ended up flipping a duplex. And I bought it, and I did like a burr on it, right? And then I refinanced it, and I pulled the money out. And then I used that money to buy a 12-unit apartment complex because I didn't have enough money, but it was far enough post-bankruptcy I could finance it.
Oh, okay.
And I had this credibility for the bank because I had all these real estate investments.
Right.
That we were successfully managing. And so I ended up going actually in with my dad and bought this 12-unit building. And it was a value add deal. So we were able to refinance it and pull our money back out.
Yep.
And by the time I got through that, I was like, man, these value add deals are great. Like, these are way better than single families. And it just opened up a whole new world of investing. And I just kept doing that. And I still do that. So I've never really And I don't put a lot of time into it anymore. You know, at first I was like, whoa, I only have X dollars.
Right.
I got to figure this out because I'm going negative every month. But now that I don't go negative every month, it's like I put whatever effort into it I want. And I find deals, you know, 3 or 4 deals a year. And I feel really good about that.
3 or 4 deals a year, are those single families? Or are they primarily commercial?
We're doing almost all commercial now. Mm-hmm. So we do, my sweet spot's probably like 15 to 50 unit buildings, because there's just not a lot of competition there. You know, most of your regular, you know, investors with 2, 3, 4 properties, they're just not, they're scared of those deals.
Right.
They're too big for them. And your big syndicators, they just, if they're under 70 or 80, they're not even looking at them. Although that's starting to change, because as the prices have gone up, I think the numbers matter to the syndicators are more like, hey, if it's 5 million and up, I'm interested.
Right.
Well, it used to be we were buying these 50, you know, 40, 50 unit buildings for a couple million bucks.
Yeah.
But now they're like 4 or 5.
Right.
And that's in, of course, in tertiary markets, they're a lot more in submarkets.
Correct.
Yeah. So we're getting a little bit of competition on the upper range of our stuff now.
Yep.
But I look at that as great, because now I have stuff and I can sell them to these guys that are paying crazy numbers. And,
you're right. And you can sell into that.
Something else. You
right.
can sell into that
high value. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. All right. So when we say commercial, are you just doing apartments or are you doing any other asset classes?
No, I have actually the building I'm in now is our office building. We have 14 units plus our own here. And then, so that's sort of like an office hack, you know, like just to get us a good place to stay. And then we have an industrial building, and I have a couple of like regional, like community shopping centers, like strip malls, basically.
Sure. Yep.
But Family Dollar is one of our tenants.
Yeah.
You know, we try to pick a strip mall with an anchor tenant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently entering into real estate?
Yeah. Well, two things, and they're related. The first thing I would have done differently is I would have started sooner. You know, if I'd started buying when I was 19 or 20, when I was thinking about it, when I turned 30, I wouldn't have been bankrupt because I would have had income, even though my business wasn't making money anymore.
Right.
And then the second part, which is definitely related to that, I alluded to earlier, is I would have started the multifamily a lot faster, because the way that, you know, that income valuation approach works with cap rates, you have so much control that you don't have in the single families and duplexes and stuff. So
you're right. You through your management style, right? Increase income, decrease expenses. You can force appreciation through the multiplier, let's call it, right? Through the cap rate.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And you know, what opened up to me is I was reading, I think it's Brian Murray's book or something, but it was like Crushing It in Apartments. And he was explaining how cap rates worked. And I just went, why am I not doing this?
Right.
And the only reason I was able to have time to read his book, honestly, was because I had this period of time where I wasn't working. And I was like, okay, I've got 6 months worth of income. I can take some time to reflect on what I want to do, which is when I started thinking about, you know, how can I really make an impact, not just on myself personally, but on the world. And I would never have been able to have those thoughts and the clarity if I didn't have the time off. So if I could go back again, that's the other thing I'd tell my younger self, is like, figure out a way to get a break where you can just think about what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your team look like?
Super small.
Yeah.
We're really lean. I mean, we have one assistant that works with us. And then it's just my partner and I, primarily from old fashioned real estate. We do a little bit of syndication and, you know, some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then we try to buy a few deals. We picked up 100 units or so of apartments last year together. And that adds up. It really does. And so, but because it's just, picking up a few deals here and there, we don't need a giant team.
Right. No,
but we do rely on a lot of other people. Like, you know, we have really good relationships with property managers, brokers, bankers. I mean, it's still a team. It's just not insourced team.
Yeah, exactly. Where are you out of? And then where are you primarily buying?
Yeah. So I live in Chattanooga now. I moved here for work and I just stayed because I've loved it here. I've been here 11 years, and we buy a lot of stuff around Chattanooga as a result of that, because I'm very familiar with this market. I'm actually a really big believer in you should only invest in markets you have a deep understanding of.
Sure.
And so the other market I bought a fair amount in is actually Michigan. And again, it comes to, I'm from Michigan, so I know the market better.
Yep.
I don't think there's like magic to this. It's like, I think people make money in every market. That's, I even like the markets that seem crazy to me, like Phoenix or San Diego or something. Yep. There are people making money in those markets. And so I feel like you just got to understand your market, and that's important. Right now, I think there's a ton of opportunity in Puerto Rico. So I've been going to Puerto Rico back and forth constantly. Yeah. In fact, I rented a place for myself on the beach year round now. Yeah. So I try to spend almost half, but not quite half the year there because there's a lot of reasons for that. Most people in real estate and in the business world are trying to like stay just over half in Puerto Rico because there's some tax advantages.
There's some tremendous tax advantages.
Enormous, right? Right? But because I'm a value add real estate investor and get a lot of bonus depreciation, I don't pay tax anyway.
Yeah,
so like, I don't want to mess with my current 0% in favor of 4% in Puerto Rico. So I'm like the weirdo that's like counting my days to make sure I stay under half and don't accidentally become a resident. And you run into all these folks there. They're like Bitcoin traders and stuff that have tons of money. And they're like, I need to stay 17 more days this year. Otherwise I might get taxed, you know, and stuff. So it's kind of weird, but it's a very exciting market there right now because there's a lot of chaos in the market. It reminds me of when I was investing in Detroit in 2011. We made a ton of money because the market was just constantly frothy. Everything was changing and bubbling up and, you know, one market would be going up and another would be going down. That's what's happening in Puerto Rico right now because of all the new money coming in, coupled with some of the infrastructure issues that they've had in the last few years, a lot of which has been resolved. You know, after Hurricane Maria, they spent $100 million updating their infrastructure.
Wow.
You know, and that sounds like a lot. They need a bit more, but they then privatized their electric grid. That's helped a tremendous amount. They're continuing to spend, you know, tens of millions a year on their water grid. So what's happened is their infrastructure is significantly better than it was a few years ago, coupled with huge amounts of new money coming in because of the tax incentives, you know, and you still have a lot of vacant buildings because they had a huge population decline after the big hurricane.
Sure.
So it's a really interesting market. I'm fascinated by it.
Yep.
And also I have a 2 mile white sand beach out my back door. So,
beautiful.
You know, so I can't argue, right? I've got this turquoise blue water and I'm on the 12th floor, so I can just look at the ocean all day. So
incredible. It seems like there's a lot of runway there with the tax advantages and it being US.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. The United States, right?
Much more. I mean, we have a lot of inflation there as well because of currency inflation, but it's pegged to the dollar. So you don't have to think about conversions. Right. And you've also got, you know, the benefit of a lot of the stability of the US government. I mean, there's a lot of Caribbean nations that you don't know where they're going to be 10 years from now. Puerto Rico. I don't know for sure that it's not going to be a state, but I can be pretty sure their government's going to be stable.
Correct. Yeah, the government's stable. You're sound. You're right about that. If you think about through Central America and the stories that pop up, there's a whole bunch of places you'd never want to go to.
Yeah, and I mean, and the thing is, the crazy part is there are places in Central America that are awesome right now that were terrible a few years ago, but it's also vice versa. Yep. There are some parts of Central America where it was amazing a few years ago and it's not now.
No, right.
And, you know, like right now, Colombia is a great example. I know a lot of people that are very interested in going to Colombia. When you say that to people that aren't familiar with how much Colombia has changed in the last few years, they're like, I would never go to Colombia. Like, I would get caught up in like drug trafficking or something, right? But it's just not the case. Like, Colombia is an emerging market. It's beautiful. There's a lot of advantages to being there. But the thing is, 15 years ago, Venezuela was the place to live, and no one wants to live in Venezuela now.
Right.
That's exactly dangerous. Right. You're going to get kidnapped. Like there is drug trafficking and all that. And so that's the problem with any government. I mean, it could happen here too, but we have a level of stability that we sometimes take for granted. It's not common in the world.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, where the people ultimately run the government, or they just get total chaos in the streets, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm a big fan of the U.S. I continue to want to be a U.S. citizen, and so Puerto Rico is good for that too, because that's the other thing. There's no immigration, and like even during COVID, I just get on a plane and go to Puerto Rico, right? Yeah. I mean, I have to do a COVID test or whatever, but I don't have to worry about them shutting me down. I can go back and forth freely.
Yeah, no, that's great. All right, back to business, a question, and then I'm going to pivot. What's a little known habit that you have in place that has attributed to your success?
Well, the most obvious one is just the like positive mental attitude thing, right?
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that's really important is just being really authentic, and that's sort of related to that.
Yeah.
I think that if you live in your own true self, you're going to attract the type of people that resonate with that to you. Yep. And, you know, you're going to end up with people that, that want to join your team. They want to invest with you. They want to partner with you. They want to, whatever, they want to buy from your business because they like what you're doing.
Right.
And so I really, that's the big life lesson for my last decade or so, is the more I lean into like living the best version of my, of being me, the easier my life becomes.
Yeah.
And not the hard, most people think it's hard. It is hard to rip the Band-Aid off and make those big leaps. Like right. If you really want to be a real estate investor, that first deal is going to be really hard.
Correct.
But it's so worth it.
So right? Worth it. I mean, it's so worth it. It gets a lot easier. Yeah,
yeah, it does. For
it's
sure.
Also not as hard as you think.
Yeah, it's the same thing over easier. And over. Correct. Too, right? And then you start repeating the behavior.
Correct. Yep.
And also you don't have to reinvent the wheel, right? Like you just find someone who's already done it and maybe partner with them on your first couple of deals or just ask them some good questions.
Correct. Yep. Let's move on. I want to go to our final segment, what I call four impact.
Four for impact.
Your favorite quote, the moment you accept responsibility for everything in your life is the moment you change anything in your life. Hal Elrod said it. Why was that so impactful for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's like, it resonates really well with me. Like Hal and I actually have a ridiculous number of like similarities in our story, yeah, right? Like, right. Yeah. So that's part of it. But, you know, again, he's leaning into being his authentic self, and that's attracting people to him that resonate with him.
Right.
And that particular quote is how I look at my life. I didn't realize it before I heard him say it. But what I said earlier about, you know, it wasn't my fault that I got leukemia, but it was my responsibility. Yeah. That's the way I think about it now. It's not how I necessarily thought about it then. And one of the reasons I clarified that thought process is from that quote from Hal. So when I met him 6 months ago or so, I actually shared with him that was my favorite quote of all time. And so now I'm kind of stuck with it. Cause like, if I ever see him again, he's gonna call me out if I tell somebody something different. So
what do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
Fear is the most obvious one. And again, it's still related to that, you know, same Hal Elrod quote. It's like, you just got to take responsibility for where you are and decide strategically what to do and then go do it. But most people get hung up on they either are afraid of what might happen instead of afraid of what will happen if they don't do those things. And I think if you can reframe that, right, you say, you're not going to regret something that you tried and failed at nearly as much as something that you want to do and you never tried to do.
Right.
You know, look, my wife's out on the Appalachian Trail right now. I don't know if she'll be successful or not. The success rate's like 20%, right? So lots and lots of people drop off of this thing. It's a 6-month hike through the woods from Georgia to Maine. But when I told her I wanted to move to Puerto Rico and spend more time there, she was like, well, I'm going to have to quit my job if we're going to spend so much time in Puerto Rico. And I'm like, yeah, you are. And she's like, well, if I'm going to quit my job, I've always wanted to do the Appalachian Trail. I'm like, go do it. Am I going to miss her the next 6 months? Yeah, of course. It's going to be hard, but it's also like, I know for sure that if I wanted to do it and I didn't do it, I would regret that a lot more than trying.
Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask your personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com. You know, when you frame it like that, my mind goes to, in the business outcome world, would be, do I either want to stay on the path that I'm on, which, you know, I think if we're having the dialogue with ourselves, it means that we're not totally happy or fulfilled. Or do I want to end up on a totally different path with a totally different outcome? And if it means addressing that fear head on and overcoming that to end up on a new path, or I just accept where I'm at, and not to say it's bad, but you accept it and know that this is what you're going to be doing for the balance of your life. This is the path you're going to be going down. It's just, it comes down to, you know, which one hurts worse or which one feels better.
Right. Right. No. And I think about that a lot, actually. So to me, the saddest thing in the world is when someone's like retirement age and they've been unhappy their whole life. And then now they're 70 years old and they're like, man, now I finally get to go to Florida and golf or whatever it is that their thing is. Right.
Yeah.
I had this guy when I was working at 7-Eleven, he would come in every day and he would never talk to us for years. Like you'd ask him questions. If you got him to say two words, it would be a miracle. Hmm. And he always came in at the exact same time. And one day he didn't show up. And then the next day he showed up about an hour later than usual. And he was really chatty. And I said to him, I said, you know, I've known you for 5 years now. You know, I worked at 7-Eleven the whole time I was in college and grad school too. So I was there probably 7 or 8 years. And he said, yeah, I retired. And he started telling me about how he loved to like take a week off once a year and go to the South Pacific and how he was excited to be able to go back to the South Pacific, you know, and all this. And I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking, I'm so happy that he's now no longer miserable,
right?
But he's like 70 years old and he's been miserable for as long as I've known him.
Right.
And like, to me, that's just it's way better to try something and fail at it because you can just like try something else. Right. But what you can't do is you can't get back that 40 years you worked a job you didn't like. And I don't care. I mean, like if he was an engineer, I learned later, if you love being an engineer, great, go be an engineer. I have nothing against engineers, but this guy clearly didn't want to be an engineer.
Right.
He might've at some point, but he didn't anymore.
Right.
And people get stuck into these things where they're the easiest thing to do is just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's scary to do something different.
Yeah.
And so they never do it.
Right.
And to me, that's just very sad.
Yeah. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Yeah. So my biggest thing that I do now is I really just try to lean into helping people live that best version of their life.
Yeah.
So we even started a podcast. It's called Last Life Ever. You mentioned it at the beginning of the show. And it's just where we interview people like doing awesome stuff, right? Like Olympic gold medalists or people who are professional comedians, but also people that like maybe they went through some trauma. Like one of my most interesting interviews I ever did, this guy lost his son in a battle in Afghanistan and he was very upset and he didn't know how to respond. I mean, I don't know how you respond to something like that.
Right.
And it took him some time, but then he ended up starting a charity for returning war heroes and helping them work through the trauma that they experienced. And what he told me was, he said, you know, the thing is, I couldn't move on until I figured out how to find three positive things that came from my son's death. And I thought, man, that's like next level stuff. Because for me, I'm always like, I just got to find one positive thing
right now.
And I'm going to be happy. And this guy's going, my son died, but you know what? Three really great things came from it. I was able to help this person. I was able to, you know, build this better relationship. And that's not to minimize his son's death. I'm sure that he still misses his son every day.
Yep.
But being exposed to people like that and helping people see that no matter what's going on in their life, that they can make these tough decisions to do like really important and awesome things.
Yeah.
That's my passion right now, is helping people see that.
Well, my next question may bleed into exactly just that. What's your favorite way to make an impact?
Yeah, it is exactly that, right? I mean, that's the thing. It's what I spend most of my time on now. And it's also like, it's the one thing that if you want to get me really excited, you just be like, hey, tell me about how to give up bad days or tell me about how to like, you know, like figure out your life's purpose, right? Because I wrote a whole book on that at one point too, like his little ebook. But I mean, it was like, just like discover your life's purpose. And the whole, it was just exercises to get you thinking about what is it is that's important to you.
Yeah.
And we did that just because we thought, you know, hey, listen, sometimes the trick is just to recognize that there are other options.
Yeah.
And so everything I'm doing now is just about seeing potential in people and in myself, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. Well, if for those in the audience who want to follow you, they want to learn more, they want to just connect online, how can they connect?
Where
can they
find that? So I'm not hiding, right? If you Google Jeffrey Holst, I'm in like Jeffrey Holst on Facebook, you know, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all of those, right?
Yeah.
And so you can check any of those social media sites. But the best thing to do is really to join. We have the Last Life Ever private Facebook group. It's free. We don't sell anything. It's just literally people encouraging each other to live the best version of their life. lives. And I hang out in there all the time. So if you want to get my attention, that's where you find me. Post something in my Facebook group and I'm going to see it for sure.
Yeah, perfect. We'll make sure we get the links added to the show notes below. And that way people can find you.
Cool.
I sincerely appreciate you taking the time. You've got a tremendous story about that's really impactful. That goes way past real estate, about how you've come through your journey, how you found really who you are, and being faced with a whole bunch of challenges and having to define who it is that you are and what you stand for. And so I really appreciate the work that you're doing and helping inspire others. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And I mean, I love real estate, and I'm sorry we didn't talk about real estate more, but like that, you know, we get onto this tangent of what's really important. What I love about real estate, Neil, is that it allows people the freedom to live however they want.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, I mean, I love the deals too. I like putting stuff together. I just find it fun, but not everyone does.
Right.
But everyone has something that they love. That's what I think they should be doing.
I couldn't agree with you more. Is finding the benefits, that the items inside of real estate that you really enjoy, out getting a team insourced or outsourced around you to support that, and then deriving the benefits for what this industry can give you, and you're living that.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I really appreciate the time. Hey, for everybody here, Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. I'll see you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.